Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg.
And Fred and I have been chatting before we hit the record button,
which
as
I had
we
to
always do.
I had to interrupt you to say, no, we got to record this.
Yes, exactly. We've been chatting about the profound importance of understanding failure mechanisms as a reliability engineer or even as a reliability manager. And it's like this subject that is very deep and very integrated into the fabric of design for reliability. And so I keep thinking about it more and then what we were chatting about, and that this is the exploration for the podcast, which is, when do you have enough knowledge? How much knowledge do you need to be a good reliability engineer? Because you could get a PhD in just about any of the models.
Any specific mechanism
you could explore for your entire career. And so what's the appropriate level of knowledge, and how do you use that knowledge in your reliability practice?
Wow, this is an easy one, Carl. You just have to know enough more than the next person in your office.
It's like running away from the bear when you and your friend are running away.
That's right. You don't
just
stop
have to
and
be
put
a little
you...
bit faster than the other guy.
That's right. Yeah. No, but I say that facetiously, but it's true. You need to know enough to make good decisions, right? And yeah, I'm sure I've told this story before, but I got this phone call from another, when I was at Hewlett Packard, somebody called me and said, hey, I'm not supposed to be talking to you. I'm like, okay. That's a different way to say, good morning.
Yes.
And it led to me spending a couple of weeks, not more than 2 weeks, and it wasn't even full time for 2 weeks, of learning all about ceramic capacitors and how they fail. Mm-hmm. And the presenting question was, if a capacitor cracks, these multi-layer ceramic capacitors are essentially little pieces of glass. If they crack, what is the chance that they'll fail hot, that they'll turn into a white hot little flame-inducing ceramic heater? And I'm like, I didn't know they could do that. And he says, well, we kind of discovered they can the hard way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so at that point, other than being able to properly identify a ceramic capacitor, 8 times out of 10 on a circuit board, that's all I knew. So I spent a couple of weeks. I did a little research with some of the material scientists in our group that I was working in. I called a couple of vendors, and I had the advantage I could call them and say, hi, this is Fred from HP Corporate, because I sat in the corporate building. I wasn't on corporate staff by any means. I was in a technology center, but they didn't need to know that. And I got ushered into, their senior scientists and senior technical folks and stuff like that. And discovered that, yes, it can happen. And here's the set of conditions that lead to that occurring. And then here's the probability of it occurring, roughly. Right. And here's some experiments we could run to go fair, prove this thing out. And so I told essentially that story in a webinar, not naming where I got the first call from, because I didn't want to get them in trouble. And within the next 2 weeks, I had 10 other divisions call and say, hey, can you spend a little more time with us? Because we don't know enough about these capacitors and we're having these issues. And within 6 months, I was the capacitor expert in the company.
Yeah.
And I really seriously did not do a PhD work on this. I asked some more questions. I got some research. I got some deeper understanding, but it was just a little bit more than the rest of the engineering staff that we had available.
Right. So you can lead them. So you can advance the organization to that level.
That's right.
And you can't do that if you don't have knowledge. And I agree, you don't need a PhD. There's so many resources available to self-learn for specific types of mechanisms. Let me just share with you my background on this. I'm going to go back to the 1980s. I didn't have a lot of knowledge about failure mechanisms. I have a mechanical engineering degree, so I understood a lot of the mechanics and the physics involved. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't an expert in models or anything that or deeply into some of the mechanisms. Because my reliability was back then, when I first started out in reliability, was more test and fix. Mm-hmm. And we had the luxury, really it was an illusion, we thought we had the luxury of having a long product development process where you could test and fix.
Right.
So you test it, you don't necessarily know the mechanism of failure, you just know whether it failed, and you can at least see what failed, so then you can improve the design somewhat, and a very lengthy product development process. I changed my whole view on this in the mid-1990s. I think I wrote my first paper on the subject in 1994 that talked about design for reliability, because by the early 90s, I realized we could no longer do that. Mm-hmm. Now, opening up this subject called design for reliability, suddenly you have to understand capacitors. You have to understand the products that are being developed, even if you're a reliability engineer. And I say even because obviously the design engineer is going to understand it. But I think also the reliability engineer has to have a pretty good understanding of how things fail and the mechanisms of failure to design the tests, to be able to perform the FMEAs or lead the team, to be able to essentially design for reliability. And to me, the core, the essence of design for reliability is the mechanism of failure. And if you understand that really well, you can do a good job of DFR, you can do a good job of ALT, you can do a good job of FMEA. But just to continue the story and bear with me, when I wrote my book, now fast forwarding to 2011 or 2010, I started writing, I collaborated with University of Maryland because I wanted to integrate failure mechanism better into FMEA. Mm-hmm. And they were doing a type of FMEA. They had actually written some papers they wanted me to review, which I did, called FMMEA, mm-hmm, Failure, Mode, and Mechanism and Effects Analysis. And the whole idea there was they were using the subject of FMEA to identify which mechanisms were most important. And then they would drive projects to improve the knowledge and application of those mechanisms. And so that took my knowledge to another level, where I started to integrate mechanisms of failure better into FMEAs.
Well, there,
that's my story.
And with Kel's story, it pulls out mechanisms explicitly, which is, I think in my experience with FMEAs, is oftentimes in the cause. We have a failure mode, it stopped rotating, for example, and that's a mode. And we look at the causes of that and go, well, it's corrosion, or it's debris, or it's it's mechanical wear, or it's whatever. Those are general classes of mechanisms. And some engineers, some teams I've worked with then break it down. And, well, that's this type of corrosion. This is this specific type of phenomena that's occurring. And they may get into the detailed failure mechanisms, but it's hit or miss with the team I'm working with. Now, backing up a little more into your discussion is that when you start doing DFR, I think the role of the reliability engineer really changes. Instead of saying, I'm going to help you interpret the failure analysis and this is what broke and here's you need to go fix it, that build, test, fix approach. With DFR, we're trying to prevent that. We're trying to design it more robustness into a product right from the get-go. And that's when I count on the electrical and mechanical engineers to be curious enough about the processes that are being used in the assembly of their materials and components, the boundaries of what they can and can't do. Where's the types of limitations? You know, and you've seen this, Carl. Some engineers are inherently understand that material set capability. They know its shear strength. They know they do the S and the strength strength stress calculations, and they build in margin and right from the start in their design. It's, I think our role in that case is that, are we considering the right boundaries? Are we considering the right types of mechanisms? Are we designing away from one mechanism right into a different one?
Yeah, very right? good, very good.
I think our role changes, but I think that the burden of the knowledge shifts to we help and coach and mentor the design teams so that they have the intimate knowledge in order to design in the reliability.
Yeah, excellent. And there's a gray area, I guess you could call it, or a fine line between what the reliability engineer does and what the design engineer does. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the reliability engineer isn't going to design the system, but you have to be able to talk in their language, which is a language of mechanisms. And mm-hmm. and so I think it. So how much does the reliability engineer need to know? Let me push the envelope in a few different ways. First of all, you mentioned cause, and I agree completely. Cause in the FMEA is a absolute key to good FMEAs. And the cause has two elements to it. It has the mechanism of failure, as well as the potential design deficiency. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, if you have a wall that's too thin on some device, and maybe it's also subject to corrosion in some way, or maybe there's fatigue cracks, let's put it that way, fatigue okay. cracks. And so the mechanism of failure is fatigue, but it's due to the wall being too thin that makes it vulnerable to fatigue, or whatever that cause is.
That's right.
So you want to get both of them described in the cause of the FMEA to do a proper job. And I also want to say that I agree that fatigue and corrosion are categories, because you can have galvanic corrosion, pitting corrosion, you know, other types of corrosion. And so that's pushing the envelope a little bit. In other words, to the reliability engineers who are listening to this podcast, learn about failure mechanisms and learn the types, and learn that there's more to it than just corrosion or fatigue or wear or fretting. They all have their own subcategories. So you can get you can push your knowledge to a new level is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I first started learning about failure mechanisms, and it was back about the time frame you were in the 90s of, you know, getting into failure mechanisms more detailed, is I was asked to do an accelerated life test. And so it was, well, I need to apply a stress that actually activates the mechanism that we're interested in, right? And so it, you know, in my mind, Carl, very, very few things in reliability work doesn't get touched by an understanding of failure mechanisms, right?
Right.
There's right. So many things that touch into it. So I was asked to design an accelerated life test. And so I spent time with the material scientists and the chemists for this particular product to understand that, oh, it's an oxidation process that's breaking down the polymer chains. Now, I could not write that equation out, right? I had references for, you know, people I could go talk to that understood the details at a PhD level of those mechanisms. But I was bringing to the table, well, I'm going to use that information to design an accelerated test and be able to interpret it. And then it went full circle, is that as we're doing this testing, we're seeing a curvature in the behavior. The time to failure information we were getting was slowing down. It wasn't not going to happen. It was just slowing in the rate of degradation that was occurring. And so I said, now the mechanism that we, as I understood it, said I should, every polymer chain eventually will get enough active oxygen near it and it'll break it. And I should see a nice linear degradation in the bulk material of this performance parameter we're looking at. Well, that wasn't happening. So my, of course, the first thing I looked at was, am I doing the test right? You know, did I screw up something? Did I, the temperature change in the chambers or, you know, something like that? And everything seemed to be okay. So then it was back to the chemist going, what could explain this? Why am I seeing a difference in the results versus the expected mechanism? And it led to a pretty nice breakthrough of, oh, our product creates, as it degrades, that breakdown of the polymer actually makes it less able to diffuse oxygen to the inner layers. So it kind of puts a protective coating on it, right? Same with like copper on a roof, right? It turns green. It's oxidizing, right? It gets this green patina on it, but that actually then protects the bulk of the copper. So it's a great roofing material because it will corrode a certain amount and then it'll stop. It'll or slow down significantly. But if you don't understand that and you put up a metal roof that's made out of steel and you make it the same thickness as your copper ones, you're only going to have a roof for about 2 years.
Right. No. Excellent. Excellent. And just to for reader's knowledge here, we started with mechanical, and so we gave examples of corrosion and fatigue and things like that. And then your example is chemical, and I'm looking at the broader definition of failure mechanism: the physical, chemical, thermodynamic, electrical, or other processes that result in failure. And in other words, the same subject that we're talking about here can be applied to electrical. And if we were looking at electrical, we would look at things like the dielectric breakdown or the EMI, voltage drops, different mechanisms that are electrical. Or even on the elastomer, I did a whole project on that was based on the Space Shuttle Challenger with the O-rings. Mm-hmm. And getting down to the mechanism of failure, which is what was the problem with the O-ring: abrasive wear or compression set or hardening or swelling? What was the underlying mechanism that related to the elastomer that caused that problem?
That's right.
And so the taking it to the next level here for reliability engineers is realizing that mechanisms of failure go beyond just mechanical or chemical. They go into electrical, elastomer, thermodynamic. It's really understanding the physics that are taking place that that can explain what is happening at the failure level.
Yeah.
How do we get really to that failure?
The trick, I think, is to go deep enough into the understanding so that you can explain it to somebody else, so they get the gist. And if they're And here's where you can get more research. You don't need to do a PhD. And we started off with this. You don't need to go get a PhD in each mechanism.
Right.
A broad sense of them for the ones that are key to your particular product or process, then dive into it deeper. You do need to get a pretty deep level of understanding in some cases. Not every case, but in some cases. What I find fascinating is that the ability to share that knowledge with the rest of the team, to get them to ask better questions, to talk to their vendors that they're working with, to go, you know, is this thing reliable? Well, that's not a really great question to ask a vendor, because they're going to say, well, of course it is.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. That's why we're in business. We've sold 48 million of these things and, you know, and blah, 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 blah. Like, all right. No. What's going to fail? Everything fails. You can't tell me it's not going to fail. All right. What's going to fail? And how do you know? What's
right?
You know, it's really get after that understanding. Do they know the failure mechanism? Can they explain it to you so that you can understand it and take it into account if you use that particular product or device or system?
Well, and to circle back to something you've said earlier that applies here completely, which is you need to get enough understanding of the mechanisms of failure so you can get to decisions, mm-hmm. so you can get to action. And I really look at it as the actionable level of your, you have to get enough knowledge so you can take action. And those are really the action is decisions.
Yeah. And every circumstance is going to change. Is it good enough for this particular set of conditions or constraints or use? Is there enough margin there? How do we know? But more and more, as we understand failure mechanisms as reliability professionals, we're going to get invited to fewer and fewer meetings in a low maturity company because we're just going to walk in and say, oh, that's going to fail. That's going to fail. That, you know, this is going to be an issue. You got to look at that. And they're going to be tired of us telling them how bad their product is. Whereas in an organization where you're doing more of the design for reliability work and you're building it into the system, it's more of a collaboration with the experts in these material sciences and chemistries and electronics and assembly processes so that they're asking the right questions and expanding their knowledge of failure mechanisms.
So this is a great thread for a person's career. In other words, I think it's really good for one's career to know where your organization is in terms of capability and maturity. And on the subject of mechanisms of failure here for this particular topic is to introduce it at the right level. In other words, you don't want to talk to the organization at the PhD level if they are at a very low, much lower level of maturity. Mm-hmm. You need to get into their level and bring them up and keep bringing them up.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think my last thought on this is that it's one of the reasons I love the career I landed in is that the scientists and engineers around the world keep inventing new things and new combinations and new materials and new systems that fail in unique and creative ways. And so we have a never-ending supply of, I never thought of that, you know?
Right. Exactly. Innovation will create new ways things can fail.
And which is a key point. I don't mean to sound flippant about that, but it's personally satisfying to have the opportunity to constantly learn and grow and explore things. I'm just curious that way. I love to think, ask my mom. I love taking things apart and finding out how they work or don't work.
I still do.
Yeah. But I think part of it is that curiosity has to be towards some purpose. And I think that's what you're bringing out is that if the organization doesn't understand what corrosion is at all, and they say, oh, here's a cost-cutting idea. Let's get rid of this protective coating. We don't see corrosion now, so we don't need this coating. Well, wait a minute here, guys. Let's back up. Why is that coating there to start with? Whereas another organization may be exploring ways to optimize that process so they get rid of porosity and still can thin out the layer to save money. Which is a fundamental understanding of how that coating works and doesn't work to do its job of preventing corrosion, which is a whole different level of understanding in the organization than an organization that's just looking for a straight cross-cutting and doesn't understand why it's there to start with.
Yep.
Yeah. No, this is a never-ending topic, I think. We've picked a couple of topics like that recently.
Yes. Yeah, we have. Yeah. Well, good conversation.
Yeah. Well, let's ask our readers. One of my favorite questions when I'm working with a team and we're having lunch and chatting is like, what's the most interesting failure mechanism you've run into? Right? What's the coolest thing that you... And we could all learn. Right. We don't need names and dates and products and, you know, all those kinds of things and the massive recall and blah, blah, all those fun stuff. But what was the phenomena that you've run into that is interesting or unique or uncommon or, you know, that you'd like to share? And I think that would make a great topic.
Yes, it would.
To the cool failure mechanisms.
Very good, Fred.
All right. Thanks, Carl. Enjoy your day.
All right. You too.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.